Thanks.
So today I'm going to talk about homology. Hopefully I'll get to talking about persistent homology. And I'm going to do so under the guise of finding holes in cell phone reception. So to get started, I'm going to just have a quick disclaimer. I'm going to talk about groups and images and kernels and functions on groups, homomorphisms. Pretty cool with that. Like, do I need to define that stuff? We know that stuff is? All right, cool. All right, so I'm going to restrict, first of all my topological spaces are going to be manifold, so I'm going to give that quick definition real quick so that we can be done with that. So definition, topological space X is a manifold if some secret technical properties that I'm not going to talk about and the following, and every point X in X has a neighborhood homeomorphic. Everybody cool with that word too? Homeomorphic? Yeah? Homeomorphic to what am I going to say? Well, an open subset of Rn, or, well, we have to deal with boundary, right? So we should probably deal with one of our manifolds at boundary, which is, well, I should take the set of all guys in Rn such that their nth coordinate is greater than or equal to 0. That's upper half space. Okay? So intuitively, a manifold is a topological space that locally looks like Rn, or perhaps it has a boundary. So let's give some examples of these just so we know what we're talking about. So, and this n here is going to be the n here, and here, and here. I'm going to call that the dimension of the manifold. So, like, for example, a one manifold would be something like a circle, right? Because if I look locally around any one point, it looks like a copy of the real line there, all right? Another example of a one manifold would be something like an interval. All right, two manifolds, well, we have the corresponding sphere, right? This is like a one-dimensional sphere, so I could have a two-dimensional sphere, which would look something like that. And if you look locally, it looks almost like a plane, so it's pretty much like R2, right? And then also we have another interesting example. This object is called a torus. You probably all know that. And there's lots of other examples, but I'll leave it at that for now. So, question, sort of motivating question for us today. How is a sphere different from a torus? Well, I mean, first of all, they certainly should be different, right? We give them different names, so they should be different in some way. What's the idea behind how a sphere is different from a torus? Well, one thing I can do is I can talk about submanifolds of a manifold. If I take this curve that runs along here and then goes around the back and comes back to there, that's an interesting curve on a torus in some way. It's interesting in some way because, well, I can't really do anything to that curve. I can't shrink it down. Like if I put a curve on a sphere, right, this maybe like this curve, for example, that bounds this little disk here and I could shrink it down. I can't do that here. Right? But I should probably make that a little bit more formal. And that's the point of homology, is to take ideas like this interesting one-dimensional hole here and formalize that. All right, so that's the idea behind homology. Here's like a one-dimensional hole in a way that we're going to make clear in just a second. All right, so that's the motivating question. How are these manifolds different from each other? And we're going to do that by constructing homology. All right, so let's one technical thing first. We have to talk about triangulations of manifolds. So I'm going to give a definition that I'm going to put in quotes so I don't actually have to define it. Triangulation of a manifold, MFLD is how I abbreviate manifold. Triangulation T of a manifold M is a decomposition of M into, well, triangles. But that doesn't really make sense. So I'm going to generalize triangles to simplices and then just give some examples. So a simplex, a zero-dimensional simplex, well, that's just a point. one-dimensional simplex, that's going to be, so here's zero-dimensional. One-dimensional simplex is going to be just an interval. Two-dimensional simplex, that's why we actually call these triangulations, because that's a filled-in triangle. It's two dimensions. Three dimensions would be something, well, you need a three-dimensional triangle, whatever that would be. So it ends up being a pyramid with a triangle as its base. It's called a tetrahedron. The four-dimensional one would be something that I think most people like to call hyperprisms, but it's the same idea, right? I add an extra point, and then I add all the edges between it, and then I fill in the stuff, right? Here I have one of these sitting as the base. Add an extra point, add all the edges, add all the faces, and fill it in, okay? Now, intuitively, I'm going to define a face as well. Just by example, a face would be, for example, just any sub-simplex of a simplex. So if I have a one-dimensional simplex, I could talk about zero-dimensional sub-simplices. For example, that vertex, right? I could also talk about, say, maybe that edge as a face, right? This is also a face. Draw that too. Okay. So now, well, a triangulation has a couple of extra properties. Let's draw a picture, all right? If I want to triangulate, say, the sphere, I can do that by, example, I can do that by starting with the equator, and I'm going to try to create this. I'm going to try to, first of all, triangulate the equator. So let's add a point here in the front and a point here in the back, and then I have an arc going from here to here and an arc going from here to here, and that's a triangulation of the equator. All right. Now, they don't quite have triangles on the top and bottom, so I should add some more arcs so that I get triangles on the top and on the bottom. So I'll add the sphere that comes down here, or the arc, and add the arc that comes up, and then around this way. And now, well, do I have triangles yet? Let's see. One, two. No, I probably should add a little bit more. So let's just finish the picture quickly so we can move on. So something like this. Now I have the northwest, northeast, and another northeast, northwest. Yeah, these are all going to be triangles now, right? I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 of them. You see that? I've broken it into triangles. And the dimension of this manifold is 2, and so I use two-dimensional triangles, two-dimensional simplices. Any questions about that? Are we cool with triangulation? Okay. So now triangulations are useful because they allow us to talk about our manifold I'm going to use a fancy word, combinatorially, which means we can talk about our manifold as a collection of objects and how those objects relate with each other, and then we don't have to worry about the global structure of the manifold anymore in a way that I'm about to make more clear. I need an eraser. Here we go. All right. So, let's see. Let's do one more triangulation example. And then we'll move on. So, since I'm going to be computing homology of a torus eventually, I probably should triangulate a torus. So, another example. Here's a torus. Now, drawing triangles on this is going to be a little bit trickier, so I'm not going to do that. What I'm going to do is I'm going to first turn the torus into something else, and then I'm going to triangulate the something else. So, I can construct a torus by starting with a flat sheet, like picture a piece of paper, right? Then take the two ends of the paper, the two, say, vertical ends, glue them together like this. What shape do I get then? Should have a cylinder, right? Cylinder has a circle on top and a circle on the bottom. Grab that in your head, pull it around, and glue those together, and you get a torus, right? So the way I'm going to write that is I'm going to start with my square piece of paper, and put an arrow like this and an arrow like this, and you identify the sides along the arrow. All right? Do the same thing here, except I don't want these to be identified to these, so I use two arrows for this. Everybody see what's going on here? This means start with this object, glue this, then glue these. All right? See how you get a torus out of that? Pretty cool? All right. So now I have a torus. I'm just defining it this way, describing it this way, and I'm going to triangulate this object, and that corresponds to a triangulation over here. All right? So, here's my triangulation. It's clearly a triangulation, right? I write it as a union of triangles and edges and vertices. How many vertices are there? There are two vertices. It looks like there are five, but don't forget I've glued this to this, so these two are the same, and these two are the same. And then I've glued this to this, so this set of two is the same as this set of two. All four of these are actually the same vertex. And same with this edge is the same as this edge. This edge is the same as this edge. So how many edges are there? Well, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And how many faces are there? Well, there's 1, 2, 3, 4. I don't glue any of those together. Cool with that? This is a triangulation of a torus. Okay. So now I'm going to give a whole bunch of definitions. And they're sort of going to hopefully make some intuitive sense as to the n-dimensional holes that we were talking about before. All right, so first definition. A K-chain, so K is supposed to be some number. A K-chain on M, some manifold M, is a formal, what does that mean? Linear combination of K simplices in M. So let's give everything here some names. I have color here. I should probably use all this color that I brought. Let's see here. So I had, how many vertices did you say I had? I had two vertices, right? So let's call those maybe X1 and X2. And then I had six edges, so let's label those E1. And I'll give them an orientation, too. E2, E3, and E, this one that I just missed. There, E4. Maybe I'll call this one E5. This one E6. E5 as well, right? That's the same one. This one is E6. And this is the same as that, so this should also be E6. And then, what color am I not using yet? I'm not using red. And then I'll call the faces maybe F1 and give them an orientation as well. F2, F3, F4. So by an orientation, I just mean a direction, right? If I'm talking about the orientation of a plane, I should talk about which way the plane faces. Either if I have this plane sitting in space, maybe it faces that way or it faces this way like a mirror. All right? Okay, so I have all this. A K-chain is a formal linear combination of K-simplices. So, for example, I can construct a one-chain on a torus by, say, maybe taking, I don't know, E2 minus E3 plus E4 plus 17,842 E6. Okay? And those mean absolutely nothing. That's what I mean by the word formal. It's literally just a collection of symbols with some numbers in front of it. Okay? So if you wanted to think about this in the language of groups, what I'm doing is I'm constructing a K-chain is a group where I have a copy of the integers for each one of my K-simplices. So in this case, one simplex. So I can have E2. There's a copy of the integers corresponding to E2. There's a copy of the integers corresponding to E3, etc. And this is just a big old group where the elements of this group look like this. All right? Now, that's not particularly useful because that doesn't really make any graphical sense, right? If I wanted to talk about E2 minus E3 plus E4 plus 17,842 E6, well, that's like running along E2, where is it? E2 once. Running along E3 once in the opposite direction and going along E4 forwards and then going along E6 a ton of times. And sure, I can talk about those objects as they relate, as they sit on my manifold. But they aren't describing anything useful, right? So now I want to talk about the K-chains that describe useful information. Like, for example, on this torus, we had this curve, right? And we said that's a useful curve. We want to analyze that curve. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to define a function which picks out interesting curves. All right? So definition. It's called the boundary operator. Oh, and I probably should denote this as CK of M. The boundary operator, it has this symbol that looks almost like a delta. It's not quite a delta. on CK of M is a function, it's a homomorphism, from CK to CK minus 1 of M. It sounds really scary, but what is it? I called it the boundary operator, right? It's just going to take, first of all, I'll define it on simplices, takes a simplex and spits out its boundary as a chain, all right? So the defined by, and again, there's a, oops, I should underline this. There's a formal definition for it, but I'm just going to give the intuitive understanding. So, boundary of, if I have a one simplex, maybe call this E1, call this, say, X1 and X2, it's two vertices, and maybe it's oriented this way. The boundary of this, well, its actual boundary is like X1 and X2, right? But I want to retain information about the way that I oriented it. I did that for a reason, and I like that I've given it an orientation, so I want to retain that information. How am I going to do that? I'm going to say that, well, I'm going to start with the head, X2, where it's pointing to, and then I'm going to subtract X1. That's why I'm doing these formal linear combinations, so that I can talk about positive and negative in an interesting way with respect to the boundary operator, right? So the boundary of this, sure, it's X1 and it's X2, but I want to write it as a K-chain, and K-chains have numbers that sit in front of them, and I want to make those numbers useful somehow. This is how I'm going to do it, right here. So 1, X2, and a negative X1, because I'm going away from X1, all right? So that's the significance of the numbers. All right, so I should probably define boundary of a 2 simplex, and if I orient it this way, and maybe I orient this one as E1, this one's E2, and this one's E3. Well, what I'm going to do is, well, this should be, you know, some amount of E1 and some amount of E2 and some amount of E3, right? Those are the boundary of the simplex. Now, what sign do I give them? Well, I have to follow along the orientation of my simplex, my 2 simplex, in order to orient the 1 simplexes that are the boundaries. So in this case, I've chosen the orientations to be exactly perfect, and everything is positive. But if I had instead oriented something backwards, like this, and this would say E3, E1, E2, then its boundary would be E1 still, plus E2, and then plus E3, but going this way. But that's going the wrong way, so we should give it a negative sign. All right, is everybody clear with what's going on here? And we can define it for higher dimensional manifolds as well, but I'm gonna keep it at this for now, just because I don't want to give the formal definition. All right, and then one more thing that we're going to do is a technical condition. What's the boundary of a point? That doesn't really make any sense. So I'm just going to call it 0. Okay? Any questions so far about the boundary operator? So it takes in K chains and spits out K minus 1 chains. Takes in 2 chains, spits out 1 chains. Takes in, you know, 17 chains and spits out 16 chains. All right, and then it just gives you the boundary, but it uses the algebraic structure, it uses the numbers in a useful way. All right? So now, what's a property of these useful circles that bound these interesting holes that I had before? Well, if I look, well, what does this correspond to? Well, if I glue up, so think about your torus as gluing like this, right? I glue up this, I get this long cylinder, and then I glue the two ends of the cylinder together. So this loop is going to eventually correspond to E6 over here, right? So if I think about E6, what can you tell me about the boundary of E6? Well, this point here is X1, right? And this point here is X1. So its boundary should be X1 minus X1. It should be 0. All right. So in some sense, the guys whose boundary is 0 are interesting. So I should call those something. I'm going to call them cycles, because the other object that I had, which was like a sum of this and a sum of this and maybe some negative ones of this and a ton of negative ones of that, that wasn't very useful, and its boundary would have been a ton of just a big mess. So the useful guys have zero boundary. Okay. So I should define those next. All right. Over here. So our definition. A K cycle has boundary, K cycle Z has boundary equal to 0. So it's a chain whose boundary is 0. Okay, and I'm going to denote this, the set of these, as Z sub K of M. Z is, I think, for the German Zyklus or something, like Zyklin or something. Cycle. Okay, now that's how we find the interesting holes in our manifold. But those might not all be interesting. What are some not interesting cycles on this torus? Well, here's one. What if I just did this? Well, if I had some triangulation in my manifold that included this, what's its boundary going to be? Well, it starts here. It goes back to the same spot, so its boundary should be that point minus itself. Its boundary is definitely going to be 0. But that's not an interesting loop, right? I can shrink that loop down. So the way that we characterize these is we say, oh, look, they're the boundary of something, right? So cycles can be interesting or not interesting. And the not interesting ones all happen to be boundaries of something bigger, right? For example, this disk here is two-dimensional, so it could be a two-chain, and its boundary will be this one cycle, right? So I don't want to count those. So I should define those so that I can get rid of them. So eraser. So we've almost got all the language we need. Definition. A K-boundary. Well, it's the boundary of something, right? And I defined my boundary operator to spit out boundaries. So, and it's a map, it's a homomorphism, right? So I can talk about its image, and its image should be, well, take something, take its boundary, and you get the image of that, right? Take an element in the image, it's the boundary of something. Those are the not interesting guys. So that's what I want to talk about. A K-boundary lies in the image of the boundary operator on K plus 1, one dimension higher, chains. Everybody cool with that? So I have these cycles and I have these boundaries. Cycles contain all the interesting guys, but they also contain not interesting guys. What are the not interesting guys? Those are boundaries. All right. So now I want to say, okay, I want to find all of the interesting holes. That corresponds to finding all my cycles, because those certainly grab all the interesting holes, but they have too much information. So what kind of objects should we be talking about? We should be talking about a quotient, right? Because I have found all of the interesting guys, K cycles, and now I need to remove all the not interesting ones from that set. Okay, so now I should talk about quotients. So if my final definition is the kth homology of M is, we denote it as H lower K of M. And we said, okay, well, that's all the cycles, but we don't want to count the boundaries. All right, everybody cool with that? So now I quotient out, and we'll do a couple examples so we see what's going on with this. We take all the interesting guys, we get rid of the not interesting guys. All right, let's do an example of this. Any questions about this so far? No? Pretty cool? All right. So let's do it for our torus. So now, example, torus. So let's start with K equals 0. So 0-dimensional homology is what I'm looking for. So I need to find 0, the set of 0 change, so C0 of T2. What were the chains? Those are just take all of your simplices of the right dimension and take formal linear combinations of that. So it's all of the X1s and all of the X2s. All right? So it's things that look like A, X1, plus B, X2. where a and b are integers. Right? So, and now if I want to find cycles, I should take their boundary, right? Boundary of x1, what did we say the boundary of a zero-dimensional simplex was? Well, that was the weird thing. We just said that was always going to be zero. And boundary of x2, well, that's also going to be zero. Now, I probably should live. In order to compute my kth homology, I need to talk about k plus 1 boundaries, right? Or boundaries, k boundaries, which lie in k plus 1, or they're the image of something in k plus 1. So let's take a look at all the 1 simplices and see what their boundaries are. So let's compute, say, the boundary of, for example, E1. Let's have a look. So E1 is oriented this way, and its boundary is, well, you take the head and you subtract the tail. Right, so x2 minus x1. So this is x2 minus x1. All right, what about the boundary of, say, E2? Well, that's also x2 minus x1. I'm not going to bother to write that down. E3 is also x2 minus x1, etc. This is the only interesting boundary. If you just try a bunch of them, you'll find out that that's the only one that you can... That's really all that interesting. All right, so what does this mean? So So in order to compute my zeroth homology, I take all of the zero cycles. So that's x1, and it's also x2. So there's two of those. And I say, I don't want to count these ones. So I set these ones equal to zero. Okay, so this is the set. It's the group generated by x1 and x2. So I have two copies of the integers, one corresponding to x1, one corresponding to x2. And then I don't want to count x1 minus x2. So really what this means, this intuitively means set x1 minus x2 equal to 0. Okay, well if x1 minus x2 is 0, that means that x1 is equal to x2. So I have the group generated by x1 and x2, where x1 is equal to x2. What group is that? Well, it's just the integers, right? I have a copy of the integers for x1, I have a copy of the integers for x2, and then I set them equal to each other. So I created 2, and then I smashed them together to get 1. All right, so this should just be the integers. We cool with that? Does everybody see what I did there? One copy of the integers. The important thing is that this is z to the first power. Questions? No questions? We're good? All right. Now let's do... So that was zero-dimensional homology. That's a little bit weird. Let's do one-dimensional homology. That should make some more sense. All right. H1 of T2. Well, I should find all of the 1 chains whose boundary is 0. All right, so let's see. E1, that had boundary x2 minus x1. That's not 0, so I don't care about that. All right, let's look around here. What about E6? If I take the boundary of E6, that should be what? It should be x1 minus x1. That's 0. All right, so boundary of E6, that's certainly 0. Cool. All right, what other boundaries are 0? Well, I'll do the other easy one. E5 is also 0. Right? All 4 of these vertices are the same vertex. So, x1 minus x1 is also 0. All right, what other ones can you find? Well, how about E2? What's the boundary of E2? It's x2 minus x1. I don't want that. But what if I subtracted off E1? So I'm thinking I can go this way. So I can go this way and then down to here. And then what do I have as the total boundary of this? It should just be this minus this. Well, that's x1 minus x1. That should also be 0. Of E2. So it's E2 and then it's E1, but E1 going in the opposite direction. So it's minus E1. That should be 0 as well. All right. Now, there's a ton more. I'm not going to write them all down. But there's a bunch that look like this, right? E3 minus E2 and E4 minus E3 and E1 minus E4. Those all have boundary equal to 0. And what about E1 minus E3? That's kind of an interesting one. E1 minus E3. See that? So E1 starts here, goes to here. E3 starts here, goes to here. So that's X1 minus X1 still 0. Everybody still with me? Okay, sure. So I have all of these tons and tons and tons of cycles. Now I want to say, okay, which one of these are boundaries? Which ones do I remove? Well, nothing that I've written here is a boundary, right? Notice, sure, certainly I could say, oh, E1 minus E2 minus E6. So going from here to here to here. That's definitely a cycle, right? Because I start here, I go around, and I end on X1. So it's definitely a cycle. But that's silly because it clearly is the boundary of F1. So I'm definitely going to write it down and then immediately throw it out. So I'm not going to bother write that one down, right? So there's a ton more that I didn't write down, but these are all the interesting looking ones, all right? So now let's look at. So we said, okay, we have to look at our one cycles, and then we look at the two dimensional boundary to see which ones are boundaries, all right? So let's compute some boundaries. I'd say maybe, I don't want to write in red. Let's compute, say, boundary of, say, F1. What can you tell me? We'll start here, and it should be E6 going in the positive direction, E2 going in the positive direction, and then E1 going in the negative direction, right? Because E1 points this way, and we have to go around this way. So it should be E6 minus E2. Oops, sorry, plus E2 minus E1. Okay, so that's one of my boundaries. Now, why do I care about that? I care about that because I have a ton of cycles, right? Lots and lots and lots. I wrote down four interesting ones. There's tons more. But I also have the fact that this E6, E2 minus E1 is a boundary. So eventually, I'm going to set that equal to 0, right? So if I later set this equal to 0, well, I'll get the fact that E6 equals E1 minus E2. You see that? If I set this equal to 0, I just move these two over and I get this one. Okay, sure. Why is that useful? Well, this is one of my cycles, and this is, well, it's negative, another one of my cycles. So I'm saying that, yeah, sure, that's interesting, that's interesting. They're both interesting, except they're the same. Because they share a boundary. Together they make up a single boundary. All right. So not only do boundaries just immediately kill stuff, set certain things equal to 0, but they also can equate things as well. So I found too much information here, and I'm going to patch it back together by saying, oh, this plus this, or this minus this, is a boundary, so they're actually equal to each other. All right. This one's not 0. This one's not 0. They're interesting homology elements. They're the same interesting homology element. That's what this is telling me. Okay? So this one's the same as this one. What about this E1 minus E3? Is that the same as something else that I already have written down? Well, let's compute, say, boundary of, well, let's see, E1 and E3, that looks like it shares a piece of boundary of F1 and F2. So let's compute the boundary of F1 plus F2. I think that's the right orientation. F1 plus F2. So let's see. The boundary of F1 should be E6 plus E2 minus E1. We just did that. All right, so that's the first one. And now I'm adding. Do I want to add? Yeah, I'm adding F2 to that. So that should be, plus. What's the boundary of this? It should be E5 plus E3, I wanted to subtract. It should be minus E5 minus E3 plus E2. Did I do that right? Let's see. I wanted to make it plus after all? Yeah, I did. It's going to be E5 plus E3 minus E2. What does that give me? These E2s are going to cancel, and I should get that E6 plus E5 minus E1 plus E3 is my boundary. Well, that means I'm eventually going to set it equal to 0. And so that tells me that E6 plus E5 equals E3 minus E1. Is that useful at all? Well, E1 minus E3, I said that that was an interesting element of my homology. I wanted it to be an interesting element of my homology. But so is E5, and so is E6. And so I am saying that, okay, well, E5 and E6, if I add them together, I get this other one. So what I'm saying is, well, it's more than just this. Right? It's more than, okay, that was interesting, and I'm setting them equal to each other. But I also have, that one's interesting, and so is that one, and so is that one. And there's some combination of them that I'm going to set equal to each other. Right? So there's a lot of calculations that go into this. But at an intuitive level, it kind of makes sense. Right? You find interesting things, and then you sort of take the not interesting things and you set them equal to 0 to simplify your system. Right? So what are we going to have after all? We're going to have E6. We're going to have E5. And those aren't going to be the boundary of each other. Or they're not going to share a boundary. So they're going to be distinct. And then all this other stuff in between. So we said, okay, well, yeah, I can find interesting ones here. I can find interesting ones here. But they're going to just end up being stuff like this. So this is useful. This ends up being not useful. All right. So we're going to have H1 of the torus being, well, it's got an E5. And it's got an E6. Those guys are interesting, and I'm not going to get rid of them. And then there's lots of other junk here. And I'm going to say, oh, all that junk is going to be equal to E5, or maybe all that junk is going to be equal to E6. And so what am I doing? I'm saying, okay, I already have this one, so this is not useful, and this is also not useful. So what's useful is just E5 and E6. So that's just a copy of the integers for E5, and also a copy of the integers for E6. So it's going to be two copies of the integers. Everybody see what I did there? I said, okay, I've got interesting, and, well, also interesting, but equal to the stuff I already found. So I'm just going to get two things. And how should I see that on my picture? Well, this was E6, we said, right? Where's E5? E5 is going to appear right here. So I've got an interesting one-dimensional hole right here, and an interesting one-dimensional hole right here. So I've got two interesting one-dimensional holes, and no others, because that number right there corresponds to the interesting that-dimensional holes, one-dimensional holes. We cool with that? All right, let's do H2, and then we can be done with this torus. So H2 is pretty simple. All right, H2 of the torus. Well, what sorts of boundaries, what sorts of, okay, so I want two-dimensional simplices, so my red guys, my Fs, and I want their boundary to be 0. Well, okay, so let's think about just like F1. If I take its boundary, it's going to have a positive E2 contribution, right? For example, other things too, but a positive E2 contribution. So I should get rid of that positive E2 contribution by maybe adding or subtracting off an F2, who also has that as its boundary. Okay. So if you just kind of think about it, you say, okay, well, I want a positive contribution. I want an F1, but I don't want this E2 to be in its boundary because that's not going to be 0. How do I make the boundary 0? Well, I should subtract off this. So I should add an F2 because F2, the boundary has a minus E2 in it. Right? I just keep playing this game all the way around. And it turns out that, well, let's just run one of them. I think I wrote it down, because I don't want to mess it up in the middle of this. It's actually just a sum of all of them. Did I really orient these right so that it happens? Let's see. F1 plus F2 plus F3 plus F4. What's this guy's boundary going to be? It should be E6. This is the boundary of F1. E6 plus E2 minus E1. All right, sure. Plus E5 plus E3 minus E2. That's the boundary of F2. Boundary of F3 should be E negative E6 plus E4 minus E3 minus E5 plus E1 minus E4. So that was me going all the way around this circle, and then this circle, and then this circle, and then this circle. Well, let's see. Did I do it right? I have an E6. Oh, but I also have a minus E6. I have an E2, and I have a minus E2. I have an E1, and I have a minus E1. I have an E5 and a minus E5. I'm sure this is... I have an E3 and a minus E3 and an E4 and a minus E4. So I've set it up exactly right so that this is equal to zero. Right? And you can quickly check in your head that no other combination is going to do that, because if I have, say, maybe E1, E2, and E3, well, they're going to have this is going to sit on the boundary, and I'm not subtracting it off at all. And this one's going to sit on the boundary, I'm not subtracting it off at all. So you should believe that this is probably going to be the only two cycle. All right. Now, what about three boundaries? We can talk about three boundaries here. Do I have any three-dimensional simplices around? No, this is a two-dimensional object. There's no three simplices anywhere. So there is no three-dimensional boundaries. And so this is all we've got. So H2 of the torus equals z, in particular z to the first. Now, how should you think about this? So we said that H1 corresponds to one-dimensional holes. H2 should correspond to two-dimensional holes in some way. The way that I like to think about H2 is, suppose I took this object and I made a balloon out of it, and I could fill it with air, right? Fill up this torus with air, and then take a pin and puncture it. Will it pop or will it not pop? Well, I just made a balloon out of it, right? It should pop. What is that? What do I mean by that? Suppose now, take another object. Take, say, this bowl-shaped object and fill it with air. Now, take a pin and puncture it. What happens? Nothing. Why? Because there is a hole right here, right? You don't have an encapsulated two-dimensional hole. You have a one-dimensional hole, and as a result, the air is able to get out as soon as you puncture it, right? So you can't like fill it up and give it pressure so that when you puncture it, it pops. Does that make sense? So the copy of Z here means I have an interesting one-dimensional hole, right? Or, sorry, two-dimensional hole. Unlike here. I don't have one here. All right? Cool. So let's talk about... Wow, I just used a ton of time. So let's talk about now... How does this relate to cell phone reception? You all came here thinking, okay, this talk's going to be about cell phone reception. What are we talking about here? We're talking about simplices and homology. Suppose I worked for a cell phone company, and I wanted to know where all this... I wanted to determine how good or bad my cell phone reception is. And so I go out there with my tool that sits on every cell phone that measures cell phone reception, and I go around walking around trying to find all the holes. I'm going to record that information as a surface. And the surface might look something like this. Right? Here's the map of Austin, and maybe there's a cell phone hole there, and maybe there's a cell phone hole here. And so maybe I should... I'll put in a background so you can see the holes. So there's... Here's the background. And so I can go around and talk about holes in cell phone reception. Here's the map of Austin. Doesn't look just like Austin. So what does a hole in this surface correspond to? A hole in this surface should correspond to where I'm missing cell phone reception. Like, for example, the top of a mountain usually never has cell phone reception. Or, if you work for AT&T, my house doesn't have any cell phone reception. So my house would be sitting right here. So I can use homology to find holes in cell phone reception, because in this case, first homology of whatever this surface is that I construct will pick up some holes, right? All right, fine. There's a problem with that. What did we need in order to compute first homology? First of all, we needed a triangulation, right? Why do I not like that? Well, when I triangulate this surface, well, I'm going to intuitively say, okay, so I have to triangulate this hole that I now know is here, and so I start triangulating, doing my thing, whatever. and, you know, draw some triangles in. And the problem is I already have to know where the holes are in order to triangulate this. So I say, okay, I'm going to use this homology to find holes. But in order to do it, I need to know where the holes are. That doesn't make any sense, right? So what we need to now do is talk about how am I going to get at this homology without already knowing everything, because that's not very useful, all right? So what I want to do is, okay, suppose I have a slightly more fancy tool. Instead of just a cell phone that I walk around with and say, yep, still got reception, yep, still got reception. A slightly more fancy tool which says, okay, my signal strength is this strong. Maybe it's, you know, I don't know what the unit is for signal strength. We'll call them whatever. You have your signal strength ohmmeter, which goes around and measures signal strength, and it also can tell, okay, if it's a certain strength, then in an area around that, there's also going to be cell phone reception, right? Because it's not going to go from, you know, 10,000 of these mysterious units to zero right next door, right? Cell phone reception kind of works in an area because of the way cell phone towers work. So suppose I walk around to a couple of different spots inside the city of Austin, and I say, okay, I'm going to measure cell phone reception right there. And I'm also going to measure cell phone reception here, and 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 here. And my meter tells me, well, okay, so I have cell phone reception right here, and also if it's strong enough in an area around that. All right? What I'm going to do now is I'm going to say, okay, I'm going to compute homology in all of these little regions here. But these are all disks, so there's no interesting holes in there, and I'm not going to pick anything up. Everybody see that? I'm not going to pick up any interesting homology when I do this. There's a disk here, there's a disk here, there's a disk here. And maybe I picked one up here, and I got no information there. All right? So how can I use this? Well, let's think about this for a second. What if I could tweak my meter to make the area around each one of these points larger or smaller? Right? Start with it really small, and then make it larger and larger and larger, and see what happens. Well, let's make this start with the circles where they are now. Blue will be at a certain time, and then orange will be at a later time. Oh, not orange. I already have orange. Red will be at a later time. All right. So I've got red is a later time, which corresponds to bigger holes. And maybe something like this, maybe something like this, maybe something like this, and maybe something like this. And so I can detect homology in these bigger holes now. And then bigger holes and bigger holes and bigger holes. My meter just gets stronger and stronger as I go. Now, some of this doesn't really make too much sense, right? So patch all this together and compute the homology of whatever's sitting in here. Well, I've got an interesting hole right there. You see that little triangle space that's missing from my red region that I constructed? So my meter should pick up this homology right inside of that little hole. It's not going to pick up anything from this, and it's not going to pick up anything from this, and it's not going to pick up anything from that. But okay, so make your red circles a little bit bigger now. What happens? This little triangle goes away. You see that? The triangle's gone. But now, maybe, after I make my red circles bigger, I can pick up, say, this entire hole. Right? If this red circle gets bigger and it includes this, and I can compute homology just inside of that red disk, well, now I can see this hole. You see what I'm saying? So what we're going to do is we're going to eventually construct a graph. And the graph is going to be this. It's going to be, so we're going to have time here. And I want to now pick up cell phone reception in units of time. So my blue guy sits maybe here, and then my red guy sits maybe here. So the size of the circles grows with time, we said, right? So here, what's my homology? In the blue time, there's no homology, right? In the red time, there's some homology, and I'm going to mark that with a point, all right? And then maybe that persists for a little while, right? As these circles start, eventually these three circles are going to touch, but just barely. And I'm going to pick up that hole, and that corresponds to this point. And that lasts for a certain time until I get to maybe white circles that include everything, and now that circle, that interesting hole that I found, is gone, right? And then later at this white time, I encircle this hole that actually exists, the cell phone reception hole that actually exists. And so I'm going to pick up that one maybe, and I'll write that down with another point. This dimension is the dimension of homology. And that's going to last, no matter how big I make these circles now, that hole isn't going away. So this, we're going to call this is like information noise. Or, you know, if you've ever done like scientific research, they talk about noise in information, meaning stuff that's actually, you're picking it up, but you shouldn't be. Right? It's not the sound of your beautiful instrument, it's the noise that you don't want to hear. Right? Just like my beautiful cell phone reception instrument, it picked up something right here, but it shouldn't have. That's not actual homology. All right? But later I want to pick up this, and so the long bars in my graphic correspond to actual homology, and the short bars do not. All right. Let's do one more example of this. So this is how we could talk about it with cell phone reception. Let's use it now to pick up homology on like a surface, for example. All right. So this can be used in tons of different ways. We just talked about the homology of a torus using finding interesting holes. Let's do now another surface. Let's do a genus 2 surface. So it looks like two tori that I've sort of glued together right there. And I'm going to turn it on its side. Why am I going to do that? Instead of having a bunch of different points, I'm going to have... So I had a bunch of different points, right? And then I grew these disks from those points. And I talked about the homology of all these little blue spaces, and then the homology of the red space, and the homology of the white space. I'm now going to talk about homology as I go up. So climb a ladder up here and count homology as you climb, right? So at a certain time, so here's my time axis. Here's time as you're climbing up the ladder. At a certain time, maybe I'll see this picture, right? I'll just see this disc that sits down here, right? So maybe up to this point, I'll see a disc which starts small, and then as I go up higher, I'll have seen a bigger and bigger and bigger disk. Eventually I get to this point right here, and I now see a new shape. So I get past this point, and then what shape do I see? I see like a little elbow macaroni. Right? So picture that in your head. So picture yourself climbing up this ladder and looking at exactly what you can see and everything down below. So you see a disk, a disk, a disk, and eventually you say, oh, now it connects here. And now I can see that I have this object. Whatever this object is. I haven't pieced together my whole thing yet. I don't know what this whole object is. I'm just kind of piecing it together as I go. So now I see this. Well, what's the homology of a disk? How many interesting loops are there in a disk? Here's a disk. Draw any interesting loop you want. It's clearly a boundary. Right? I can just draw the boundary right here. There's the boundary. So it has zero-dimensional homology. All right. How about this elbow macaroni piece? Well, I can draw an interesting loop. Maybe this one right there. That's kind of like a piece of a torus, right? And that is going to be an interesting element of homology, and that's it. So we could compute each one of these as we go and say, okay, well, this is an interesting piece of homology, so I'll record that. So this is, again, dimension of homology. And maybe I'll go along for some time, and what's going to happen as I go up? It's going to just give me a taller and taller piece of macaroni. Eventually, it's going to connect up here, and then I'll have the next shape. What's the next shape going to be? It's going to be like this. But you see that? I'm just kind of sliding up my surface, climbing my ladder, figuring out what the object looks like just down below me. All right? And so all throughout this time, I'm going to have this same homology. So that stays the same. Now what's the homology of this surface? Well, I still have this interesting loop that sits down here. That's not going to change. So this guy persists for a while longer. Okay? Now there's more to this guy. That's a torus, right? It's a torus with a hole in it. And on a torus, I had this other interesting loop that went this way. So let's actually color code this. So this is the blue guy. And then I also have this extra interesting red one. All right, so I'm gonna write down the red one as well. That starts as right as soon as I get to this, from the elbow piece to this piece. And now this is going to go for a little bit. And now as this grows up higher, what's going to happen? I'm going to just kind of go up with a taller and taller puncture in my torus. Eventually, I'm going to get to this piece. I'm going to have another, like, locally an elbow piece up here. So what's it going to look like? I'm going to eventually have something that looks like this. Okay? Now, okay, here's an interesting question. What's the homology of this guy? Well, certainly it still has the blue curve. Right? Nothing happened to that blue curve. And nothing happened... Oops, blue curve? Yeah, nothing happened to the red curve either. So these guys are going to stay through this picture. And now, I'm going to add a new curve, which is going to be that. Certainly that's an interesting loop, right? I can't shrink that one down. So that guy, I'm going to maybe call this one, that looks like it should be another element of homology. All right, question, what about this one here? That's another loop that I can't shrink down, right? So that should be another element of homology, yeah? Well, sure, but I mean, this guy plus this guy are a boundary. They're all of this. They're the boundary of all of this surface. So since they are a boundary together, like we had before, right, the two that are a boundary together end up being equal. So sure, that one's new and interesting. That one's new and interesting, but they're the same. So I'm only going to pick up one of them. All right, so go on for a little while longer, and I'm going to get another, like, punctured torus looking shape. And then I add all the stuff that I had below. And now, just like I had before, I've got a blue guy, and now I've got that orange guy, which I'll call blue, because it's sort of similar to this one now. And then I've got this red guy, and then I've got this red guy. And is that it? What about this one here? Does this one count? Well, no, it's the boundary of everything down there. So it's a boundary, so it doesn't count. All right? So I pick up something new here, and all the old ones still persist. And then we can go on, and then eventually I'll finish my picture, and I'll have, finish my picture. And have I picked up anything else that's interesting? I still have this red guy, still this red guy, still have this blue guy, still have this blue guy, and now all I've done is added a disk to the top. And so I haven't done anything interesting. There's no new homology, and so all of these guys just kind of keep going on forever. So I can construct this graphic that sometimes has noise and sometimes doesn't have noise, like this one has no noise. And this graphic allows me to estimate the homology of my manifold. Because here, well, it looks like at some point I should have two-dimensional homology. So I should have two holes, but I don't, because we had noise and we don't count the noise. So we can use this technique, it's called persistent homology, to estimate the homology of our manifold. What do I mean by estimate? Well, we have to be a little bit careful, because some things are going to be noise and some things are going to be real. So you have to sort of piece together the data and what's the difference between the noise and the real stuff? The noise eventually goes away. And the real stuff stays, it persists. So you should probably come up with... So persistent homology is the study of coming up with these theorems where you say, okay, well, if you have enough sample points and if you wait long enough and it's still there, then it's real homology. All right? There's lots of theorems and lots of technicalities that go into that, and you deal with these terribly huge infinite product groups that I don't want to talk about. But this is the idea that goes into actually calculating homology without knowing everything about your surface, right? I wanted to discover cell phone reception holes, and I didn't want to already know where the cell phone reception holes were, so I used this technique. All right? So I guess that's pretty much all I wanted to say about this. Yeah, so we have homology that we can detect using this technique, and in some sense this is a lot easier, because I can just look at homology of just small regions and piece it all together, record my data as I go, and that allows me to construct the homology of my entire manifold. So I will stop there, and I guess we probably are going to have pizza soon. So I won't take questions now, and you can just come up and ask me questions afterwards if you have any questions about it. But all right, thanks very much, guys. Or if the pizza's not here yet, we can do questions right now. Okay, that sounds good.